Hey, you guys, before we start this morning, on your seats, and there may not be enough for everybody that's passed out, but that was not well said for everyone that's passed out. If you're passed out, let's call the paramedics. No, there are cards on your table, on your chairs. I'm very confused. There are cards on your chairs. Every week we put these out there, and they're designed to help you apply what we're talking about. So I wonder if maybe even the best use of this card would be to pick it up and even take notes on it or jot down some thoughts as the morning goes along. And then maybe you don't have to do it at the end. And then you can take it home and look at it for the week and go, yeah, okay. So there are some key questions on there like, what about this topic do I need to wrestle with? How willing am I to deal with this issue? Just honestly, no one's going to see it. If it's a zero, put a zero. You know, just be honest with it. What am I going to do about it? And are there any other passages that might be helpful to me as I wrestle with this issue? So those cards are designed to help you work through these issues, this stuff. So like they said before, we're in the middle of a series in the book of Matthew. We're called this Kingdom Values. It's really chapters 5 through 7, and it's called the Sermon on the Mount. It's a famous sermon that Jesus gave. He gave it probably just off the edge of the Sea of Galilee. He said it to people who are pretty regular, everyday folk. There may have been some Pharisees there, kind of the upper echelon of the religious world. But they were probably just kind of, on the most part, everyday real people dealing with life. And so he begins to put out the value system of the kingdom. He wants them to know this is what's important. This is the value system I want you to buy into. And we look at it and we go, yeah, that's good stuff. But we also say, wow, that's good stuff, and I violated every one of them in my life. And so eventually in the Gospel of Matthew, it's going to take him way down to the end of the book where he is going to give his life on a cross to pay the penalty for the sin where we have messed up and redeem us. But it doesn't mean that that value system isn't still very important. And so we go back here in the first part of Matthew to look at that value system. And like they said earlier this morning, what we're going to talk a little bit about today is anxiety. Jesus is going to bring it up. He's going to talk to them about it. And this is just kind of a statement, I want you to really grab onto this as we start into it. Anxiety is a normal part of life to experience occasional anxiety. It's a normal part of life. So if you feel anxious at times, guess what? You live in the world, and you're dealing with it. And so it is a normal part of life. Sometimes I think we want to get rid of it and say, and sometimes I think we in the Christian church, we kind of say, hey, if you're anxious, you're kind of a rotten human being. You know, you're not a very good Christian because you should never worry and you should never feel anxious. And I'm thinking, you know what, you guys, that is just so not true. Jesus addresses it because it's a normal part of life. And what we do with that is the key thing. And so the shame and blame and you're good or you're bad, that's just so silly to get into. So can we just put that away from the Christian world right now? But it's a normal part of life to experience an occasional anxiety. But now let's circle this, okay? So let's circle it because that's what we do here at Quest. But let me just read this. You may experience anxiety that is persistent, seemingly uncontrollable, and overwhelming. If it's an excessive, irrational dread of everyday situations, it can be disabling. When anxiety interferes with daily activities, you may have an anxiety disorder. Anxiety disorders are real, serious medical conditions, just as real and serious as any physical disorder, such as heart disease or diabetes. Anxiety disorders are the most common and pervasive mental health disorder in the United States. So what we're going to talk about this morning is going to relate to this, but in its extreme, we're not here to say, hey, let's see if we can tape a little Bible verse on it, okay? That's not what we're doing. If you're in that situation, it is needed and necessary to pursue help, okay? And it's very real. And like Mark said, there's a university on the East Coast that is fully 50% of all this incoming freshmen are on medication for anxiety and depression. There was a local Midwest university that suggested that probably 2/3 of all their students are on medication. And I think it obviously we have an epidemic in our country of people feeling this uneasiness and a worry and excessiveness. And it's real. And so in some ways, I think we shove it under the rug, and we don't want to talk about it, and we feel shame about it. We don't want to admit it. We don't want to deal with it. But it's real. And sometimes I think it's growing. So I think it reveals an incredible brokenness in our culture and among ourselves. And so if you're in that situation, we understand there's no shame and blame to it, okay? But we would encourage you to seek help. Because that can be really very debilitating in life. But this morning, what I want to focus on the most part, is that upper statement. Let's just kind of box it here. Is the normal part of life to experience occasional anxiety. For the most part, the normal part of it. Once it gets extreme, let's deal with that in a different way. But Jesus, I think, here is addressing the normal part of life that it is to experience anxiety. In fact, it is really anxiety. I want to define it this way. The worrying about something that you can't control. Worrying about the thing that you cannot control. And we get it. We want to do that, right? And so we find ourselves in this anxiety and worrying. So we want to talk about this normal part of life that is worrying about something that we can't control. So here's the big idea for today, okay? Just so you grab onto this in this section. The big idea is this. Our common daily worries and anxiety misses several foundational true things about life and God that tends to ruin our experience. The everyday worries that we have, the anxieties that we deal with, misses some foundational realities that ruins our experience when we miss that. And so we want to see what are those things that Jesus would have to say about anxiety or worrying that would help us maybe deal with life and wouldn't ruin our experience as people, okay? So let's start in here, chapter 6, verses 25 to 34. And let me just put it up here. And you'll notice there in all the slides today that there are going to be some things that are offset. Now, here's the reason. When we do this, I want to go here, hermeneutical principles. That means how do you interpret the Bible? So there's kind of different principles that you follow. And this one today maybe is a great example of that. So the three examples or three principles of biblical hermeneutics would be the fact that we interpret the Bible literally, grammatically, and historically. And so when you do it literally, you want to take the Bible for what it says, unless it's clear that it doesn't mean it's using hyperbole. You know, that you go, when he says, hey, if you're going to sin, pluck out your eye or cut your hand off. Clearly, Jesus didn't mean that as a literal. He's making a point of doing something extreme to deal with your sin. You want to take it historically, in its historical context. How did it fit? What did it mean? What's it doing there? And how do we then pull it into 21st century? But one of the things you do is you interpret it grammatically. Now, I know, I don't know about you, but when I was in middle school, English class was the absolute worst 50 minutes of my entire life every day. My friends and I would just simply try to see how much trouble we could try to cause without really getting in trouble. If we could like cover the clock with spitwads, that's what we did. I hated English class in every way, shape, or form. You used to diagram sentences. Anybody ever do that? That was the worst experience ever. That I just hated. You draw a line down here, and inevitably I would go back to the teacher, and the teacher would say, that doesn't belong there at all. I mean, I'm so wrong. You know, a flying paraphrase or whatever they call all those things, you know? I hated that stuff. I enjoyed history class. Gym was awesome. Lunch was the best. But English class was the low point of every day. So to think about interpreting things grammatically just drives me nuts. But I began to learn a whole lot more about grammar when I took Greek. And all of a sudden you go, oh, the grammar leads you to how it's organized and what the point is. So just so you know, there's going to be a big idea, and then there's going to be 6 points grammatically. It's right there. It's easy for us to interpret the scripture. So here's what we're going to do. Let's jump in. Let's kind of box verse 25, because this is the big idea. Okay, here's the big idea in the whole thing. And let's box it. And it says, therefore. Now, every time a therefore arrives, you got to box that too, right? We're going to box it in red. What's the therefore, right? That's what you got to ask. What's the therefore? Well, it's because of what happened just before it, right? So Jesus says, therefore, based on what? Well, there's an introductory statement. We'll put it up at the top above it. And because it's too small to read, we're going to blow it up and make it big. And here's what it is. Because the human heart, this is what we said last week, because the human heart is singular in nature, God and things cannot occupy the same space at the same time, right? You cannot serve both God and money, God and things, God and stuff at the same time in the same place. They don't fit. Either you will love the one and hate the other, or you'll hate the first and you'll love the second. That's what Jesus says. The human heart is profoundly singular in nature. Two things cannot occupy the same place at the same time, right? Okay, so if that's true, therefore, we'll go back to the passage, right? Therefore, Jesus says, I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you'll eat and what you'll drink, nor about your body and what you'll put on. So let's underline anxious, okay? So this Greek word anxious does not mean the kind of debilitating anxiety that so many people experience. What it really, probably even a better translation of this word, is don't be worried. So let's change that word to worried. Don't be worried about your life, what you're going to eat, what you're going to drink, about your body, or what you're going to put on. Now, who's he speaking to? He's speaking to kind of your everyday regular guy there that lived in northern Israel, okay? And their economic situation was probably that they lived pretty much in the present. They didn't have great storehouses of stuff. Most people lived like we find in rural environments even today, but they don't have just a ton. They're living just kind of anticipating the next several days, you know, or even today. They didn't have, it was not an incredibly wealthy environment. And so he says, hey, don't be worried about it. You think, okay, now, you think, how do you apply that here today, West County? We're a little more affluent than probably most of the world. So I don't worry, frankly, a ton about tomorrow. I do worry about things beyond that, you know, the next week, next month, next year. Retirement, right? Where you just get on the radio and you just listen about retirement and investments and all that kind of stuff. And you can kind of get wrapped up in all that stuff. And I'll have to be honest with you. I don't think I struggled with anxiety or worry very much in my life until a handful of years ago. And there'd be lots of times that I'd wake up, I don't know why, 3 a.m. seems to be my brain kicks in or something, about 3. And you wake up and there's always a 3 on the first letter. You're like, oh, bummer, 309, 311. I've seen those numbers. And there would be this feeling. And I didn't even know what it was. I couldn't identify it. It was like something on my chest. And I was worried. And I thought, what's going on? Am I having a heart attack? Or is an elephant came in the room and standing on my chest? Or what's going on here? I never anticipated that it would be anxiety. And there was this, like, I guess a panic attack. Or not giant, not huge, but it was like, wow. And I thought, wow, you're not supposed to be anxious. You know, what are you anxious about? And trying to identify what I was feeling anxious about was a key thing. And it wasn't hard when I faced myself to say, oh, man, I'm really struggling with this upcoming event or this relationship or just this thing. And I didn't know what to do with it. I didn't know how to process it. I don't know. Maybe you experience the same thing as you get older, or maybe when you're younger. It seems like the country's struggling with it. And so Jesus says, hey, don't be anxious. Don't be worried about your life and all that's going to go on. You go, well, really? Okay, if I'm not going to, then what do I need to engage? What do I need to think about? What do I need to see? What do I need to understand? What do I need to believe? How do I deal with this everyday kind of anxiety and worry that we seem to have? How do I deal with that? Well, I wonder if Jesus has it pretty much here. He's going to have 6 points here for us, 6 ideas grammatically. So that's why I kind of outlined it this way. So let's go to the first one. So immediately he says, in kind of an antidote to the anxiety. He says this at the end of verse 25. Is not life more than food and the body more than clothing? Now, it's not that we don't have to think about food, right? We have to think about it. Who's going to cook? Where are we going to get the food? Where are we going to go shopping? All that kind of stuff. Of course, you want to think about having clothing. It's just an appropriate thing. But he says, isn't life more than that? And I think sometimes we get so caught up in the stuff, all that, you know, clothing and food and all the stuff of life. And it really goes beyond that, right? How about this or that? And he says, isn't life more than that? Isn't life more the real core part about your heart and your mind and your soul, about relationships and about love, about caring for people, about being engaged? Is life a lot more than all these things we get so anxious about? And clearly the answer is yes, right? Yes, my life is more than just food and the body and clothing. Yes, of course, it's more than that. He goes, yeah, you guys, don't lose perspective. Don't lose that. And then the second point he's going to make, look at this in verse 26. He says, look at the birds of the air. They neither sow nor reap, nor gather into barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. And then the question, are you not more valuable than they? So Diana's up. My wife's kind of a bird gal. You know, she likes gals. I like birds. And so we have all these bird feeders on our deck, you know, and really I've kind of now enjoy it because there are some days in the last week or so that we've had like hundreds of birds. They're like coming and they're feeding together. I've been shocked this past week at how many of different species are hanging out together on our bird feeder. Like, why are you guys being friendly? Usually you guys are like fighting, you know, but they're out there and they're just eating away. And it's not that they're not doing anything, right? I mean, they're flying back and forth from the bushes and the trees, and they're coming around, and I mean, they're like working hard in a sense. But God's providing. We have all these beautiful flowers out in our common ground, and there's birds that's eating off those things all the time. It's awesome. Yeah, so they're out there doing their thing. They're preparing. They're doing their activity. But God's supplying for them, right? I mean, there's this great food out there, and God's taking care of them. And are you not more valuable than them? Now, you have to answer that question. Each one of us has to answer that question. Am I actually more valuable to God than all of those things? Those birds and whatever it is. Are you? The answer is yes, you are. You are more valuable in his heart and his mind than all of those things. He made them. He thinks it's cool. He loves it. But when it came to the creation of man and woman, of mankind, he goes, now that's very good. Everything else was good, right? Genesis tells us, now we hit the jackpot. That's really good. You know, and he made the guy first. And he's like naming all the animals. And he sees all this deal. Like, whoa, there's one of each. You know, there's two. They go together. He's like looking around like, what about for me? God goes, yeah, watch this. I'm going to make a woman. And now he goes, and he says, Yeah, that's really good. Now we're hitting the jackpot, man. Now you're talking, va, 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 boom. I mean, woo. Now we got it down, you know. And so he made this. You are more valuable than all the rest of creation, than all of it. Wow. So life's more than just clothing and food. You are the most valuable thing in all of creation. Look at this in number 3, this verse 27, the third point. And which of you, being anxious, can add a single hour to his lifespan? We get so worried about stuff. Who can extend it because you're going to worry? If you worry more, it's going to get better, right? In fact, the literal here in the Greek is it says, who can extend your life by a cubit? A cubit was basically the distance from the hand to the elbow. And so who can extend their life this far by worrying? Who gets to do that? By all the worry in the world, is it going to get you anywhere? And the answer, who can do that? Who can expand their life? And the answer really is none of us, right? Of course, it doesn't help. In fact, worry makes it worse, right? We know that. Hypertension, heart disease. Sometimes it happens as a result of all the tension we feel and the worry we experience rather than the peace. And so he says, yes, there's more to life than just your body. Yes, you are the most valuable thing on earth to God. And none of us can expand it. It's not going to help you, right? We'll look at the fourth thing, verse 28. Fourth. And why are you anxious about clothing? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. So he's going to make an example of the lilies of the field. Now, probably where he was preaching this was on the hillside just above the Sea of Galilee. It's a place notorious for wildflowers. It was probably during that time they have these beautiful native blue iris that grow there. And these lilies that are famous, they are about 18 inches off the ground, these beautiful lilies that grow wild in this part of the country and this part of the world. And he says, now let's look at those. And I'm sure he just turned and he said, hey, you guys, look at that over there. Look at those awesome flowers. Look at the lilies. Look at the iris over there. He goes, how they grow. And look at there. Here's 3 points as a result. First of all, they neither toil nor spin. I mean, they don't even do what the birds do. Birds are at least flying back and forth. These flowers just sit. They just sit there. They don't do anything. They just exist. And then look at this in verse 29. Yet I tell you, even Solomon, all of his glory, was not arrayed like one of these. Solomon, the richest and wisest man the world's ever seen. He had more riches than you could ever believe. Even at his best, in his best clothing, in his best stuff. And Solomon had a potload of wives. I mean, a bunch of them. It was a barn full. And even in all of that, it's nothing compared to these lilies. Wow. And look at the third point. But if God so clothed, this verse 30, if God so clothes the grass of the field, which today is alive and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, will he not much more clothe you? Oh, you of little faith. Why are you so wrapped up in what God supplies? It's going to be there, guys. Can't guarantee which jacket you'll have a year from now, but you've got one for today, is what he's saying. Will he not supply much more? And the answer is he will. He will. He does. It's amazing. Fifth point, verse 31. Therefore, do not be anxious, saying, what shall we eat? What shall we drink? What shall we wear? Being worried about all the stuff of tomorrow, right? He says, don't do that. Don't be anxious for all of that. Don't be worried for it all. First point, verse 32. For the Gentiles seek after all these things. You see, the Gentiles who had nothing else to hope for only hoped for the things of this world. It's all they had. It's all they had hope for. When we were in Bulgaria a few weeks ago, I went to an English class one night, and one of the people who attended was a gal named Mina. And Mina was about a 33-year-old Bulgarian gal, had gone to school in engineering. She was very well-educated, very, very enjoyable to talk to, just vivacious, really a lot of fun. And we started talking about Christian things, and she said, well, my mom's very religious, and my brother's very religious, but I'm an atheist. I don't believe in any of that at all. And so we talked for a while. And after a while, she said, though, the only thing that I envy you for is that you have hope. I don't. It was the most stunning statement of my whole trip. And I just was thrown against the wall in my heart, like, oh my gosh. And if all you have is this world, then there's no hope for anything beyond it. There's no hope for real meaning inside of it either. And that's what the Gentiles seek after. They seek after all those things, those who don't have hope in a God who's real. Second point, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them all. He is aware of your needs. If you were to list all your needs today, if we had a whiteboard up here, and you could come up and you go, well, you really want to know? You really want to know? And you could list them all. God would say, I knew every one of those. I know. And I care. You're more valuable to me than anything in the world. I know about all those things, all your real needs. That's incredible. But he says this in verse 33, but seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. Seek me first, and all the other things get put in perspective. They shift a little bit. Understanding who he is and to seek his kingdom. And his kingdom is not just seeking a kingdom that's kind of otherworldly, right? When Jesus taught us to pray just a few verses before this, he says, pray that God's kingdom would be done on earth, that his will done in heaven would be done on earth. As we seek his kingdom, it is the reality of his kingdom lived out today in our lives, in the way you're going to treat the waitress at the place you're going to go eat lunch. Seek his kingdom, the way you treat her. Or him. Tip him big. Don't be stingy. Be generous. People are struggling out there. Be kind. Be thoughtful. Think about your neighbor today. What is it? Do you seek his kingdom first and foremost? Seek him and how he might want to have you live your life. And all these things will be added to you. You don't have to worry about all these things around you, right? It makes sense, doesn't it? I think that's the answer. It makes sense. Now let's go to the sixth point, the last one. Therefore, what's the therefore? Therefore, as a result of all these things, do not be anxious about tomorrow. This is just a great statement. Do not be anxious or worried about tomorrow. And Jesus makes this really funny statement. I think this is just hilarious. I just kind of like chuckle. I go, this is like ironic. He says it. For tomorrow will be anxious for itself. Let it be anxious for itself. You know, he's just kind of put it in perspective, right? Yeah, it'll be anxious for itself. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble. Sufficient for today is what we have today. Yes, let's prepare for tomorrow. Let's think about it. Let's be thoughtful. Let's be responsible. Let's live for today. Let's figure it out today. Tomorrow's got its own issues, right? And they're going to be there. Today's got it. Let's live there. You know, Jesus said this in John 16, verse 33. He said, I have said these things to you, that in me you may have peace. Not in the stuff of the world, but in me. In the world, you will have tribulation. Just true. But take heart, I've overcome the world. Take heart. Don't have to worry about it all. Take heart. Be of courageous heart in the middle of a world that's a little weird. So, therefore, what do we do with all this? Let me just kind of throw it out here. Kind of in the upper section there. If worries of this world, the worries of this world that make us anxious on a daily basis, that's the thing that we're talking about today, is the stuff that's a daily occurrence, the daily thing. Not the extremes, not the ones where you're debilitated and disabled. That's another issue here. Jesus is talking about everyday life that we all wrestle with and face. He says, the worries of this world that makes us anxious on a daily basis are dealt with by recognizing that even when we live responsibly, that we cannot guarantee everything will work out the way we prefer. Do you ever have that picture in your mind of what you'd prefer? The ideal. You know, I do. And I'm not sure anything in my life is matched up with it. You know, I wanted to have a really perfect house with a perfect picket fence in front of it, with perfect kids that did perfect things, so that all of you could see the perfect pastor's kids do perfect things. And the perfect wife, she's pretty close, but the perfect wife, you know, and the perfect job, the perfect church, the perfect people, the perfect, right? And I'm so bummed and disappointed when it doesn't happen. Like, what the heck? What happened there? Whose fault is that? And I want to begin pointing fingers, always forgetting that when you point, there are three pointing back at me. But it doesn't always work out the way we prefer. And we worry about it. How can we manipulate it? How can we control it? How can we do this? How can I get them to act better? I spent a lot of time, I think, as a dad. How can I get you to act better, kids? I think they didn't like that. You know, really, I think Diane and I did a pretty good job being parents. At least it seemed to me we did. And I didn't do it bad on purpose, right? And so we were having a discussion with them not too long ago. And we kind of described these different places of connection and structure, different boxes. And And they said, no, Dad, we experienced a lot more structure than connectedness. I'm like, no, that's not true. I remember thinking, well, that was a dumb statement. You know, like, your experience, what you just said, is not true. What I think it was better than yours, you know? And I just think, oh, man. But the worries of this world that make us anxious on a daily basis. And we deal with them recognizing that even when we live responsibly, I can't guarantee tomorrow. I can't do it. I'm not that big. I'm not that strong. I'm not that able. But, here's the deal. Here's what Jesus has said. But, there is more to life than just the stuff that we eat and wear. The important stuff of life is not that. There's more important things. It's not just what I eat, what I drink, what I wear. It's not just what I drive. Those don't matter. Those are so dumb. The things of our heart, the relationships in our lives. Life is more than just the stuff of life. Second, we are of the highest value in the heart of God. You are of the highest value of anything on earth to the heart of God. Period. No, nothing is more important to him than you. We live in a world that tries to tell us not only is there not a God, but if there is a God, he is a God who does not care. And the scriptures clearly reveal that there is a God who thinks you are the most valuable thing on planet earth. You are the most valuable thing in all of eternity to him. He adores you. It doesn't mean he's stupid and doesn't understand your brokenness. But he loves you with a love that is deeper than we could ever imagine. Do I feel that and do I understand that fully every day? I don't. But I believe it's true. Frankly, it's easier for me to believe it's true that he loves you than he loves me. Isn't that how we all feel? Well, I know he loves the other people. I just don't know if he loves me. He does love me. Wow. He must be amazing. If he loves me. That's incredible. That's good. That's good stuff. Okay, let's keep going. Here's what Jesus is saying. Being worried and being anxious does not and cannot add value to your circumstances, but in fact makes them worse. Golly, isn't that true? It doesn't add value to our situation to worry about it. I think it's important. Is it going to add value to your experience? And it's not. Next, God is aware and he cares about our needs in spite of the brokenness that surrounds us and impacts us. Even the brokenness within us. But God is aware and he cares about your situation. This list on the whiteboard that we wrote up here about all your needs, he knows every one of them. Every single one of them. Next, seek God. Seek his kingdom, right? Seek God. This is kind of our little saying here at Quest. Seek God, love people, engage life, and find hope. None of those have anything to do with the worries of tomorrow. Seek him. Love people. Engage life. Find hope. Seek him. And last but not least, live in the present. Tomorrow brings its own issues. Live for today. Yes, prepare for tomorrow. Do what you need to do. But live for today. Sometimes we're so busy in the future, trying to control the future and worry about it, we forget to live today. We forget to just enjoy today. Deal with today. And I think, wow, we ought to be people who enjoy the day. Guess what? Tomorrow is guaranteed to none of us. If some crazy driver decides to drive on the wrong side of the street this afternoon, you could be gone today. I could be gone today. Right? It's an incredible act of faith, I think, when you go out here on 100 out west of here and you drive one lane, one going one way and one the other, and we're both going about 65 miles or 60 miles an hour. I'm sorry, 65 I shouldn't be doing, but 60. And we're going 60 miles an hour and someone's texting or someone's adjusting their radio or someone just falls asleep a little bit. And I mean, it could be toast for all of us instantaneously, right? I mean, I just think how much we live by faith, right? I put my faith in that driver more than I put my faith in God, you know, and we're going back and forth. It could be over. So there's a part of just living for today that's really important. Enjoy it. Give yourself to it. Invest yourself. Prepare for tomorrow. It's almost like what I was saying, you know, live today like it's your last day on earth. But prepare as if you may live forever. But it could be your last day. And so we don't have to be all worried about it. Because you are his great concern. He loves you deeply. He loves me deeply. Oh my gosh. Now, does that mean if you ever worry or have anxiety again, that we're going to shake our fingers at each other? No, of course not. It's a daily decision. It's a daily struggle, right? It's a daily thing we deal with. But he'll show up again every day for each one of us. Man, he must be an awesome God that enters into a broken world. So here's what I'd like you to do. I'd like you to spend a few minutes praying. And I'd like you to take your anxieties and your worries, put them in your brain, put them in your heart, outline them, define them, give words to them, and then put it before the Lord. And say, you tell us not to be anxious for anything, but by prayer and supplication, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of Christ will rule in your heart. Put it out there, whatever you're feeling. Usually at 3 a.m. when I have to say, and I write it out in the air, God, here are the things I'm worried about. And he says, give them to me. Just give them to me. And live for today, Kevin. Go for it. So I'd like you to take a minute to pray. What are you worried about? What are you anxious about? Don't be embarrassed if you are. We all have them. And then just give them out to him, okay? Write them out in your brain. Give them to him this morning. So let's take a moment right where you're at just to pray by yourself. Father, we could be here for a lot longer. It's nice to have it be quiet, to kind of let the world drop into the background for a moment and to come face to face with you and face to face with the stuff that deep down inside of us we struggle with, we deal with. Things that we're worried about, things we're anxious about. Father, I wish I could just kind of paint a coating over my life and I'd never struggle in any way with anything. But I don't think that's the way you designed life. You asked us to every day come to grips with the life you've given us and to trust you and to walk with you and to deal with our lives. And yet we try to kind of take on the whole, you know, all of history of our lives and try to control that too. And it's impossible. And we begin to worry and be anxious about it all. And we forget that life's more than just the stuff of life, that we forget that you supply, that you care, that you're engaged, and tomorrow will take care of itself, and you'll be there. We forget about all those things. Father, forgive us for that, and may we trust you more. May we see life more clearly, deal with it more maturely, and know that today you've given us breath. You've given us life. And actually deep down, not only on a physical level, but deep down in our soul, our life is you. and you are the length of our days. And all the things that you then circumstantially put in our lives. So many good and wonderful and beautiful things. And we're so grateful for all the stuff you give us. But we recognize it's just stuff. And we need not worry. Father, for those who struggle at a deeper level with this, may your grace touch them deeply. And may the help that they find really help them through. Your kindness, and you're not bummed or disappointed or pointing fingers at any of them, at any of us. You desire to meet us. And so we want to put our focus on you and who you are. You are the God that the world knows nothing about. You're a God who cares deeply. That we are the most valuable thing on all the earth. It's the lives of people. And in fact, those people have names, and there are names. So, Father, we pray that you would give us peace in the midst of all of that because of what Jesus has said.